Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast, where we'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 37, BMW Lifetime Fluids, Lower Maintenance Costs or Bad Advice. First off, I'm just going to give a real quick history. BMW used to do what I would call old school maintenance intervals. This would be prior to the 1999 model year. They used to recommend oil services at 7,500 mile intervals. This is if you were the average driver. First inspection was at 15,000, and the number two inspection was at 30,000 miles. From the 1999 model year and later, they essentially doubled all those mileages. So the oil service or oil and filter change went to 15,000, inspection one to 30,000, and inspection two to 60,000. I'm going to elaborate more on this in a few minutes, and plus, in some respects, I've mentioned some of this stuff in previous podcasts, which, again, I'll refer to towards the end of this one if you want to kind of check out more specific stuff. But this particular one, I just kind of wanted to talk about, you know, their ideology of lifetime fluids versus really reality. And there's some different reasons why, you know, BMW went to what it was considered lifetime fluids. I mean, basically part of it is a perceived lower cost of maintenance. And, you know, that works out fine. Part of the things you have to ask yourself is, regardless of the mileage that is on the car you have, you know, let's say you bought it used, it's got 50 or 60,000 miles on it. There's certainly nothing wrong with if you have to kind of ask yourself from a mileage standpoint, what are your goals for the car? If you want to get over 100,000 miles on it, I would recommend old school, you know, BMW maintenance schedule. If your plan is you get, you know, regardless of the mileage on a car, and let's say you buy it at 60 or 70,000, and you're just looking to get 100 out of it or 125,000, you could certainly follow what BMW says if it is a newer car, which more than likely, at the time of this podcast, it probably is a relatively newer car. It's probably newer than 1999. In any case, back to basics. Why are fluids needed in a car in the first place? Well, they depending upon the system we're talking about, whether it be oil, coolant, you know, grease, so on and so forth, basically the reason that any kind of fluid or lubrication is needed in a car is to perform a number of functions. One would be to lubricate, to protect, to cool something down, to transfer heat, to stop metal-to-metal contact or surface contact. And certainly a key factor on this one in regards to oil would be, you know, any of the internal engine parts, whether it be crankshaft bearings, connecting rod bearings. You have to have what's called an oil clearance, that the oil is actually in there and it's under pressure. And this is if we're talking about, let's say, the crankshaft bearings. I mean, these are basically two different pieces of metal. One is stationary and the other one, the crankshaft, is rotating within this bearing. Well, these are both metals. So obviously, if there was nothing in there, if there was no oil under pressure in there, then you would have metal-to-metal contact, and the life of that crankshaft rotating would be measured in, like, seconds, okay? So in this case, there's engine oil in there, hopefully the correct oil that's relatively clean. It's under pressure. It's there to basically provide a film that's typically no more thicker than necessarily the size of the average diameter of the average human hair, okay? That is the only space that the oil is going to take up that stops that metal-to-metal contact as the crankshaft is rotating, okay? So obviously, as a, for instance, engine oil, just in that scenario alone provides, you know, if it's not there, your engine lasts a few seconds and then it's done. And this is obviously if it's rotating, especially at highway speeds, okay? So that's the reason why if your oil pressure or idiot light comes on, you better pull over pretty quickly, okay? So in regards to oil and for that matter, coolant, There is an additive package. These are different chemicals that are put in there to, in this case, oil. We're going to talk about where it's there to stabilize the oil, to help create a good flow situation, anti-foaming. If there's acids that are formed within the engine, these help to neutralize the acids. I mean, depending upon the fluid we're talking about, there is definitely some kind of a chemical additive package. It increases the life of it, so on and so forth. Okay. Typically, in an engine, especially engine oils, and this would be kind of old school engine oils, the first thing to go away or break down or becomes less effective is the additive package. Okay. The chemistry on it starts to change. It's not going to protect the engine as well as it could or should. And so, like I say, the additive package is the first thing to go away. So a person could say, well, if the additive package is no longer properly protecting the engine, then therefore the oil is no longer properly protecting the engine either. So what really happened with the chemistry of oil is that they, you know, when they started going to full synthetics, the base oil itself is just that much better. There's potentially less actual additive package needed because the base oil package is better oil. And so this is where they were able to go to their extended oil change intervals. Because of the chemistry of the oil itself, they were able to go from 7,500 miles to 15,000 mile change intervals. And it's all really because of the additive package and the chemistry that's used. You know, they figured out a way of making it last longer, which that's great. You know, it means that, for instance, with oil, if you have a 99 or later model car, that assuming that it is having the right oil put into it, it definitely will last longer from a chemical standpoint. The thing that they're not talking about, and again, I talk about this in a couple of other podcasts I've already done previously, the thing that nobody's really talking about is that the problem with leaving that oil in there specifically is it's still being contaminated with microscopic dirt, okay? And that dirt gets in there through the air filter. And I'll give you some kind of, to me, they're kind of eye-opening figures here in a few minutes, but you know, one of the reasons that the Europeans in particular, any of the European car manufacturers, one of the reasons they went to, you know, longer lifetime fluid intervals or longer change intervals, I should say, in Europe, and this is regardless of, it's not just cars. If you're a manufacturer of anything in Europe, even if you're, creating a product for the world market. But if you're a manufacturer in Europe, that whatever it is you make, you manufacture, if during the life of that, the use of that product, if it creates any kind of waste fluid stream, okay, if you can show to the European government that you've come up with ways of reducing that total lifetime waste fluid stream, then there's tax breaks. So the manufacturer gets tax incentives from the European government if they can show that, hey, we've come up with this new chemistry, or we've come up with this new, in this case, engine oil, as a for instance, that we've been able to reduce the number of oil changes required by half. Okay. So the government goes, hey, great. Okay. Great for the environment. Here's your tax incentive. Thank you. Okay. The downside to it is, in this case, in cars and specifically engine oil, if you're the type of person that you want to keep your car 150, 200,000 plus miles, you are going to want to change your engine oil more often than every 15,000 miles, okay? Because that scenario, 15,000 mile oil change, won't cut it long term. That microscopic dirt that gets in through the air filter that is now in the engine, in the oil, is essentially an abrasive. And so over time, it just starts to wear the engine out, okay? What's called stoichiometric mixture. So this is the chemical correct air-to-fuel ratio for an internal combustion gasoline-powered engine. And that's 14.7 pounds of air to 1 pound of fuel. Okay. Now, how much does air weigh? Well, not very much. Okay. I've done some research, and it basically means that to burn a gallon of fuel, now you got to visualize this. We've all seen, you know, gasoline tanker trucks that are transporting gasoline on the highway. Okay. You think about one of those big, huge tanks that you see. That's approximately 10 to 12,000 gallons of fuel. Well, that also means that if that tank was only full of air, that's 10 to 12,000 gallons of air. Okay. So, put this in perspective. The amount of air that has to go through an engine and therefore through the engine air filter to burn 1 gallon of fuel is about the size of that tanker. Okay. That's about 10 to 12,000 gallons of air to burn 1 gallon of fuel. All that air has to go through the air filter. Okay. So BMW used to recommend the replacement of the engine air filter at 30,000 mile intervals. This was before the 1999 model year. When they went to their, you know, prepaid maintenance agreement and the lower perceived maintenance cost, that air filter now went, goes to 60,000 miles. Now, I will say honestly that they have the newer filters do have an extra layer of this gauze that is part of the filter. And the idea behind that is to trap the larger particles before they get to the regular, what's called pleated paper filter. Okay. So a person could say, well, since they've added this extra gauze layer, therefore the filter, it's going to filter out the bigger pieces, bigger particles of dust and dirt. And so the smaller, the pleated part of it will last longer. And so hence the reason why it's capable of going from 30,000 to 60,000 miles. You're not doing the engine any favor by doing that. Okay. And here's the thing. When you do the math, when they went to 60,000 mile oil changes, and again, this is specifically on BMW, that means if your car averages 30 miles to the gallon of fuel, okay, that means in 60,000 miles, the car has consumed about 2,000 gallons of fuel, and are you ready? 20 to 24 million gallons of air, okay? So how many tanker trucks is that? Quite a few, okay? And all of that air has gone through that filter. So it's really kind of a, you know, in my mind, it's a poor economic decision that just because the fuel injection system has the capability of adjusting the air-fuel ratio, because what happens is as that filter gets dirtier and dirtier, it makes it harder for the engine to draw the air through it, okay? So the engine has to work harder to simply draw air in, which lowers your fuel mileage. And typically what it would do in the old days prior to closed-loop feedback fuel injection systems is that the fuel mixture would ultimately become richer and richer. In other words, you'd be having less air, same amount of fuel, and so your fuel mileage would go down. Well, now what happens is the fuel injection system is capable of adjusting that. So from a emissions standpoint, it's not an issue because the system sees, hey, we're not getting as much air. We're going to lower the amount of fuel we're going to inject in at any given time. Okay. So less air, less fuel. Guess what that means? Less power. And of course, this is happening over a very long period of time as you drive the car. So what happens is that over time is you get a bigger right foot, if you know what I'm saying. To get the same amount of power, you're having to apply more throttle. You're making the engine work harder. Okay, it'd be like taking a marathon runner who's in tip-top shape and putting him out on the race course and putting some sort of choker on their windpipe, okay, to where you're forcing them, it's harder for it to breathe, for them to breathe. The automobile engine's the same way, okay. By trying to, you know, do a false economy kind of a thing and have that air filter last twice as long so you get a lower perceived cost of maintenance, you're not doing the engine any favor at all. So, like I say, this is where you have to ask yourself, you know, if you bought the car and it's already got 100,000 miles on it, I would still certainly recommend doing the service to it more often than what BMW says to. In some respects, at that point, a person could say, well, now it's a lost cause because the first 100,000 miles of its life, it's been done what BMW said. Well, you can't undo whatever wear has already occurred, but you can slow it down from that point, okay? Especially if you get to where you really enjoy the car, you want to keep it, okay? So, again, these lifetime fluids, it's a neat idea. In some respects, it certainly does lower perceived maintenance costs, but in the long term, you're not doing the engine any favor. You're not doing the car any favor. Ultimately, you're really not doing the environment any favor. Okay, the idea of that, well, there's less waste fluid stream out there in the world. Well, at least in the U.S. anyway, we do a pretty good job of recycling waste oil from engines and waste fluids. And we do a pretty good job with recycling antifreeze, okay? So it's really, maybe that's why our government here in the U.S. has not gotten on the bandwagon in regards to giving manufacturers tax breaks, because we do a pretty good job. And not to say the Europeans don't do a good job as well as far as in their recycling programs. They do a very good job. Frankly, the one continent that's way behind, and they... I don't know what their thought process is, but that's Asia. But that's another story. They're not real good with with their environment, as we all saw what happened with the Seoul Olympics, how they had to literally shut down manufacturers for months to try to get the air cleaner, so the athletes could actually, breathe. So anyway, so why is, why is all of this important? Well, the interesting thing is that, with BMW, like I say, in 1999, going to these extended oil change intervals and service intervals, what's interesting is that relatively recently, they've had to bring back down some of these mileages, especially when we went into the turbocharged cars, okay? Turbocharging is extremely hard on engines, okay? There's a lot of heat produced. The turbochargers themselves are spinning up to well over 100,000 RPM, sometimes up to 150,000 RPM. They have to be oil lubricated, cooled by the engine coolant because of the heat involved. All of that puts an additional load on the lubricating, on the engine oil and the engine coolant, okay? So what's happened is the turbocharged engines have been out long enough, they're realizing that they're having problems with them because of these extended oil change intervals, as a for instance. So they've actually had to back down some of the mileage intervals. A lot of the turbocharged cars have come down to 10,000 miles, okay, as far as oil change intervals specifically, because 15,000 miles is just too long, okay? They're starting to have, turbocharger problems. They've been having valvetronic problems with the eccentric shafts wearing, the rocker arms wearing. And again, this is stuff that it's not like there's a recall or anything like that. They're just realizing long term they went too far. Okay. And so depending upon how the car is driven, I mean, most of the engines are lasting certainly 100,000 miles. And frankly, in some respects, there's really nothing in writing per se, but basically the automotive manufacturers, as far as they're concerned, the lifetime of a vehicle is 100,000 miles, okay? They really, in a lot of respects, they really don't want it to last any longer than that. And, for a lot of people, there's a whole group of people out there that keep a car until, they buy it brand new, they keep it until it's almost out of the warranty period, and then they trade it in, or maybe it's a lease, and they trade it in and get something else. So in some respects, they don't really care how long it lasts. Certainly, if you're a manufacturer, you want people to wear out your product and buy another one. But for those of us that either want to keep stuff a lot longer than that, or again, if we're going to be selling it, private party, by doing certainly oil changes more often, you are increasing the perceived value of that car if you find the right buyer. So there is definitely, advantages and that pay off on the long term. In regards to BMW coolant, they've over the years, they've kind of gone all over the place. Years and years ago, it was basically, again, because of the additive package that's in it, the recommended replacement interval for BMW coolant change services was like 3 years. Then there was a point where they went to lifetime and they said, nope, you never have to do it. I mean, yes, you should change it if you're doing a cooling system repair, but you don't have to do it. It's just as a mandatory kind of a thing. Then they went to 6 years. So they went from 3 to lifetime to 6 years. Sometimes it's 4 years. It's just, it's kind of all over the place. Okay. So personally, my own normal shop procedures and policy is that if a car comes in for a, you know, a service, let's say a vehicle check and or a major inspection, and assuming there's no perceived or no known cooling system problems, personally what I do is to check, I have these coolant test strips that check for ratio of coolant to water or antifreeze to water, and it also checks the pH of the coolant. pH is supposed to be a little bit alkaline, okay? What happens to it over time is that chemically it can start to change where it becomes acidic, which, of course, we're talking about an acid, which means it starts to eat away at the engine. The other thing that can happen with coolant is because of small metal particles that are coming off the engine, okay? I mean, the engine is made out of metal, whether it be cast iron, aluminum, magnesium, whatever the case may be. These different metals get into the coolant, and now the coolant becomes what's called an electrolyte. In other words, it will actually start to carry voltage through the coolant. Okay. Well, of course, this voltage is always trying to find ground. And I don't mean the ground as in earth ground. I mean, in a way it is, but it's trying to find ground through the electrical system, in the car because it wants to go back to the battery. In regards to the cooling system, it does this through the coolant hoses, which they're not designed to carry carry electricity. So it starts to eat away at the hoses from the inside out. Okay, so as far as coolant goes, I check it for ratio, I check it for pH, and I also use a very good quality digital multimeter where I'm actually checking it for what is the internal voltage of the coolant. And a person can go like, what? Well, if you take a good digital multimeter and you turn it on DC volts, okay, and you connect the negative terminal of the meter to any ground on the car, and you take the positive lead and you actually dip it in the coolant, take off the radiator cap and dip it in the coolant, there will be a voltage there, okay? Anything over 250 millivolts, so that's 0.250 volts. So it's about 1/4 of 1 volt. Anything over that, especially if we get up to 300 millivolts, that coolant has now become an electrolyte, and it should be changed just for that reason. Okay. So to me, I don't really care how old coolant is or how young it is or whatever. If it passes the test of water to antifreeze ratio, the pH is still alkaline, okay, and the voltage is below 0.250 volts or lower, okay, it's good. It's good coolant, okay? I don't care if it's been in there 1 year, 5 years, 6 years, whatever the case may be. The bottom line is as the car gets older, it's going to have other cooling system issues anyway, whether it be the water pump goes bad or an expansion tank or a hose or whatever, radiator, whatever the case may be. And so when those repairs are done, it's going to get fresh coolant anyway. At least it should, it better, okay? So I don't go by, if the coolant's 6 years old, so therefore we toss it. No, I'm going to do a little bit of testing. It doesn't take that long, okay? I would recommend you got to really kind of think about how long you're planning on keeping the car. Even if you buy it at 100,000 miles, let's just say, and even if, you're kind of thinking maybe you found out that the person who owned it before, maybe they were the original owner, maybe not. You could certainly ask, regardless of how long that person that you're buying the car from has owned the car, you ask them, well, how often has the, services been done to it? And if they say, well, just when the car told me to, okay, on a BMW 1999 model year and later, depending upon the car, that means that the oil changes have been done either at 15,000 mile intervals, if you're the average driver, or if it's a somewhat newer car, especially turbocharged, then they've been done at 10,000 miles. It doesn't mean the engine's, that's it, it's done, you know, or whatever. It's not a complete lost cause. It would be better if, you know, the services had been done more often for that part of the life of its of the car. It would be better, okay? The car would have, in my mind, the car would have more value, okay, because someone's done more than they really, than what BMW said to do as far as the fluid changes. But fluid is very important in cars. It does a lot. It's there's demands placed on it that are really kind of pretty phenomenal when you think about some of the different things that are happening inside the engine. I mean, like I say, the only thing that's protecting that engine from blowing up in about 5 seconds is having good, clean, high quality, correct, well flowing, well pressurized engine oil within that engine. Okay. So it's really important stuff. And so, and these, you know, extended change intervals, while it may seem like a really good idea and there's a lower perceived maintenance cost, personally, I don't go down that road and I wouldn't recommend it. So I look at it as old school, you know, do what we used to do years ago, 5,000 mile oil change intervals, replacing the engine air filter at 30,000 miles. And that's if you're assuming you're just in normal, you know, environment. If you're having to drive down a dirt road or if you're in what would be considered a dusty environment, okay, maybe you drive by, you know, fields every day or something or something to that effect, that mileage may vary, okay, as far as the engine air filter. But, I mean, they're relatively inexpensive, you know. They range in price from maybe $25 to $50. And when you consider how much air has gone through that thing, even in 30,000 miles, I mean, again, if you're driving a car, I mean, in 30,000 miles, it means it's consumed 10 to 12 million gallons of air. Okay, I mean, it's just huge. Okay, and that filter, as that thing gets dirty, like I mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago, you're forcing the engine to work harder. Your fuel mileage will go down. Okay. Because the emissions will be correct because the engine's going to adjust for it, but you are forcing the engine to work harder just to breathe, okay? Throw the filter away, put a new one in, do yourself and the car a favor, okay? So if you want to kind of find out some more specific stuff, in episode number 4, I talk about brake fluid changes. Okay, that's something else, again, another fluid that I actually didn't really mention earlier today. So episode number 4, I talk about brake fluid changes. I get more in depth in episode number 7, where I talk about oil changes. And I also talk about more about BMW's prepaid maintenance intervals schedule in episode number 11. Okay, so if you want to get back and, you know, go over those, but I just, in this particular one, I just kind of want to talk about more about, you know, the lifetime fluids and the ideology of it. If we start talking about, just real quickly, you know, again, transmissions, BMW say no lifetime. On the automatic transmissions, it's kind of a toughie. I live in California. I'm not a big pusher of doing transmission services. BMW has, initially it was lifetime, and then they've kind of gone to where they say, well, do a fluid change at 100,000 miles. Well, if you're going to do a fluid change, you should just go ahead and remove the pan and replace the filter. The issue is on some of the cars that have a plastic pan, the filter's part of the pan. So bottom line is that transmission fluid change can become a fluid service or a transmission service. And the fluid, if you're using the correct fluid, is very expensive on some of the transmissions. And it is very much transmission specific, okay? You can easily be looking at, with parts and labor, you can be looking at a $400 to $700 transmission service, okay? So personally, myself, I certainly have some customers who want to do that. I've had some who've asked questions about it. The bottom line for me is I look at it as, what do I see as far as transmission problems when people don't do you know, if let's say their transmission is supposed to be lifetime fluid, what happens to the transmission if you don't do anything? Well, in my little world here in California, Southern California specifically, I don't see a lot of transmission problems. Okay. Now, again, I'm a one-man shop, so it's very low volume. I mean, I could justify selling transmission services more than I do if, you know, I saw that, hey, if you don't do it at, you know, whatever, 100,000 miles or 125,000 miles, the transmission starts having problems. Okay. I just don't see that. I mean, I've had customers that have 150 and 170,000 miles on their cars and the transmission's never been touched internally. Okay. Now, there's going to be shops that are going to argue that point. I belong to an independent BMW technical group, so we communicate, you know, daily via email. And so I see not just what's happening around here, but what's happening really across the entire country. And I would say in the Midwest and back East, yeah, it's a lot more critical because of what's different, weather and driving conditions, okay? I mean, when you start taking car parts and you know, transmission fluid, and it starts off its morning at 10 degrees or something or negative 20, and you fire that thing up and start driving, and that fluid eventually comes up to temperature, and you're doing these heat-cold cycles over and over and over again, yeah, that's pretty tough on the car, okay? I mean, let's face it, it's tough on us. We don't want to be out there. But it's tough on the car. And the guys back East in our group, the shop owners, I mean, they basically talk about recommending transmission fluid services, I mean, complete services at 60,000 mile intervals. And some of them kind of play hardball with it, where if it hasn't been done by 80,000 miles, they don't want to touch it. Because what can happen is, you know, there's a little bit of varnish buildup, or there's a little speck of dirt that's kind of in a corner somewhere. And through no fault of the shop, potentially, they do a transmission service. They do it properly. You know, they're changing out the fluid. They're putting in a new pan and filter and gasket. They're trying to do a proper good thing for the transmission. And because they've put new fluid in there, that means that new fluid, it has a brand new additive package that does a real good job of cleaning that transmission internally, which you would think is a good thing. But all it takes is a little speck of dust that gets dislodged, or maybe there was a little bit of varnish buildup on a particular solenoid or a valve or something, and now it's changed, it's been cleaned, and now the transmission shifts differently, and the customer perceives it as, wow, my transmission now shifts differently since they did the service. I don't like it. They did something to my transmission. Okay. So now they're back at the shop and they're wanting whatever. They want another transmission. They're blaming it on the shop. Okay. And the shop potentially has done nothing wrong other than they did a service to a transmission that in this case, they didn't know it up front, but maybe they shouldn't have done it. So that's why some of these shops back East have gotten to where we recommended at 60. If it hasn't been done by 80, we're not going to touch it. You know, that's just their shop policy. Okay. So differential fluid, BMW says lifetime. If it is a lifetime fluid, I would recommend changing it out at 60,000 mile intervals. Okay. The transmission fluid, whether it be manual or automatic, if it's a manual transmission and it's supposed to be lifetime fluid, I'd recommend 60,000 mile intervals. If it is the quote unquote lifetime fluid, like I say, I don't tend to bring it up as something that I'm trying to sell the customer. Usually if they bring it up, we talk about it. I tell them what the possibilities are. That, you know, it is possible that the transmission could end up shifting differently and they may not perceive it as being better. And I let them, you know, kind of decide on that. Frankly, for a lot of people, once they find out it's anywhere from whatever, $400 to $700, they're kind of going like, yeah, I don't think so. So, like I say, in California environment, it doesn't seem to be as much of an issue. So, hopefully that's covered the fluids for you. I hope you learned a couple things. And again, I'm kind of talking, you know, BMW specific, but that's not to say that if you have another car, you know, check your owner's manual go online and see, whoever the manufacturer is, you should be able to go online unless you have a really old car. and you know, look up, well, what did they say was supposed to be recommended service intervals for your car? And certainly at least go by that, if not better, you know, if not doing things more often. So hope you learned a couple things. I hope you've enjoyed time, you know, me discussing this stuff and talking about it. I appreciate your time. As usual, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at bkpodcasts5@gmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. And however you got this podcast, whether it be iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, whatever the case may be, by all means, you know, please leave a comment, good or bad. I appreciate them. It gives me some feedback. And if you have a you know, an idea for a podcast subject, you know, by all means, again, you know, let me know, email me or whatever. It might be something I already have in the works. It'll be coming out at some point, or it, you know, it could very well be a new idea that I hadn't thought of. So, and if I need to do research, to put together a podcast, I will certainly do that. And for that matter, if it is, you know, your idea, I'll definitely give you a shout out during the podcast and say, hey, thanks for, you know, for the subject here. So appreciate your time. I hope you have a great day and a fantastic week. And thank you again for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you, and thank you again.